attention, folks. Murray throws. Touchdown, Arizona. DeAndre Hopkins. Quarterback draw. Murray, can he get there? Touchdown! Perfect!
Welcome to episode 160 of the British Birddown Breakdown. And we have just four words for you this episode. Thank fuck, that's over. Even though technically that's not really a word, but, you know, we'll go with that, won't we?
Yeah, I think that does it. That sums up my feelings as well.
Yeah, the 2022 season is over, but we've got a few things to cover this week in... what's been really a pretty quiet week in the Arizona desert. So yeah, as always, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum for, well, we say the final time, but this is technically the penultimate episode of the season.
Yeah.
We have another one to do next week or whenever.
Yeah, I guess this is our final, you know, game review. Although, as we'll get into, I think we'll do quite a short game review.
Yeah, I mean, who really wants to talk about our loss to the San Francisco 49ers? Like, what really is it to talk about from that game?
Yeah, and you know, like, we've talked about a lot of losses this season. Maybe not quite our most ever, but we've certainly talked about an awful lot of losses. In fact, it ties the number of losses for the Josh Rosen season, because, of course, at that time it was a 16-game season, and it's now 17.
Yeah, but we lost 13 that year, didn't we? This year we've lost 14.
Oh, you're correct.
So I think this is literally our most depressing season since starting this podcast.
Yeah, because I forgot we had a draw in the Josh Rosen season, didn't we?
Did we? I mean, I don't want to remember that far back. This one's been bad enough as it is.
Regardless, it's been a pretty bad season, all in all. And I think, you know, going into this game, we really had nothing. We had no expectations of anything like a win. And, well, we were not disappointed by that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even remember what the final scoreline was. Was it like 30-something to San Francisco?
Yeah, it was a boom to San Francisco is what it was. You know, a team that's very clearly on the trajectory to go deep into the postseason, if not heading all the way. And the Cardinals, who, you know, let's face it, we're starting David Blau.
Yeah, for the second time, he was starting in place of, I think, Colt McCoy was still concussed, wasn't he? So it was basically either Trace McSorley or David Blau.
Yeah.
And
in a game that really didn't matter, they went with David Blau. I mean, I think that's a pretty good summary of the season in a way, is like the Cardinals are undecided going into the game, but whether they want to just start Trace McSorley or David Blau.
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose they did reap the benefits from that, though, didn't they? Was it the first or second play of the game?
Yeah, it felt like the first, but I believe it was actually the second.
Yeah, I mean, he opened the scoreline with... I mean, it was miraculous enough it was a touchdown in the first quarter, but this one went to A.J. Green.
Yeah, and it was, you know, a big throw from David Blau to A.J. Green to get 6 points on the board, and in quite miraculous fashion, actually. It was a fake run and then a lateral and then a pass out to AJ Green, who was in double coverage.
Yeah, I mean, their tackling was somewhat lacking, I would say.
Yeah, I think ultimately this is a play that was very, very lucky to come off. I think, you know, in most attempts at this play, I think it's very easily a pick. It is very easily an incompletion or something like that. And if you got very lucky, you might get a reception out of it, but AJ Green managed to turn the corner and get running up the field to take it in for a touchdown, which is, I think, you know, very emblematic of the season, because we finally, under, you know, difficult circumstances, managed to make something happen. We got 6 points on the board and then missed the field goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just typical Cardinals, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, like you say, AJ Green turned around, you know, at least he managed to do that once upon a time.
Exactly. Was it you that was arguing that ever since AJ Green missed that catch, that's when the Cardinals have been going downhill?
Yeah, I put that tweet up on Twitter, and I mean, it kind of, like, it did quite a few numbers, let's say.
I think there's a few people agree with you on that missed catch in the Green Bay game last year being a turning point. But yeah, I think, you know, the state the Cardinals are in now, that you know, one touchdown, as exciting as it was, and it's a sort of final last hurrah for Cliff Kingsbury's offensive genius, which we'll get onto, of course. And then, of course, San Francisco goes straight back down in the next drive and virtually uncontested, put 7 on the board.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a game where the Cardinals just had to survive with what they had, didn't they? Because, like, there were so many good players that are out. You know, like, James Conner was out. DeAndre Hopkins was out. Maybe he's out permanently. Who knows? Corey Clement in the backfield and Greg Dortch maybe had a few more snaps than usual.
I mean, ultimately, it's a question of what you even do going into that game as this franchise, because it's a game which is meaningless for you. You know that San Francisco needs a win because they've got seeding implications on the line for it. In fact, you actually want to lose to get a better draft pick. Your team is incredibly injured and you know you can't, you know. Basically, point is that you know you're going into this game and you're going to lose. You just need to play 90 minutes of football. And, you know, if I was Kingsbury, I think I'd be calling a run pretty much every play just to keep the clock going.
I mean, miracles do happen. Like we saw it in the NBA last night with the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, true. But equally,
like, how many of their star players are out at the moment? And then they just go to Golden State, like the defending champions, and beat them convincingly with like backups and backups.
But again, how much of a miracle would it really be if the Cardinals, you know, did defeat the Niners and then just like lost out on a better draft pick because of it?
I would have taken it, you know, just to like sort of spoil their record of the season.
Yeah, true. And I guess, you know, like this is a good place for some of those backups and guys to like have a little moment. I'm sure nobody saw David Blau putting off a couple of good passes like he did.
I mean, he did also throw 3 interceptions, so it wasn't a great game for him overall.
Exactly. But I think we're almost talking about this game too much, actually, more than it deserves as a footnote to end the Cardinals 2022 season.
I mean, we do need to mention the fact that a player did win the British Birdland Breakdown Player of the Game Award from the game.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, because there is one player who I think obviously we deserve a special mention for.
Yeah, I mean, for the third time in the last 4 weeks, you know, I mean, even though the Cardinals season was dead, his season wasn't.
Yeah, JJ Watt absolutely pulling it out of the bag, pulling in a brilliant Player of the Game Award, his 50th different QB sacked. And just like a really nice way to, it's not a really nice way to round off a career. A nice way to round it off would have been a Super Bowl win or something like that. But I think, you know, a really impressive career that guy's had, and a really, you know, well-deserved retirement he's coming up for.
Yeah, and I mean, he got 96% of the vote, so that just says a lot, really, doesn't it? Not like there was really any other contenders for it.
It's a shame you couldn't get to 99.
I know, that's what I was hoping for, but, you know, people wanted to vote for Corey Clement and Isaiah Simmons and AJ Green for some reason.
Well, they finally did something.
Yeah, but I mean, those three combined for 4% of the vote, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, JJ Watt, obviously, you know, hell of a career. Did you see the video that was going around where they played the all the like short videos for him in the training room?
Yeah. It's supposed to be on Hard Knocks this week, but, you know, we don't get to see Hard Knocks this side of the Atlantic.
Man, what an absolutely cursed version of Hard Knocks that's going to come out to be.
I know. I mean, they're always going about the Hard Knocks curse, but I think we were cursed before that happened. So.
Yeah, like quite a while before, but like what a miserable... You know, I'm sure that when they chuck these crews in, you know, when they make these deals, they're really hoping for a good Super Bowl run or something like that, because this isn't even drama, it's just sad.
I mean, I still want to watch it just for like morbid curiosity, but... There's literally no links for it whatsoever anywhere.
I think part of the problem as well, though, is that they cut out anything that's actually juicy and interesting.
And also HBO are a bit of bastards, aren't they? You got to pay for our service. You're not getting it for free.
Maybe we can convince Channel 4 to show it or something like that. I'm sure they'll show it at 3 a.m.
I mean, I don't think I'd stay up for it, but I suppose we do have skyboxes these days that can record it and on-demand services. But yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess somewhat that's really it for this season. Do you have any last words on this game in particular?
I mean, we can thank the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, true. The Denver Broncos went out and for some reason decided to be good-ish.
Yeah, I suppose it wasn't a great performance, but they were playing against the LA Chargers side with literally nothing on the line because they were already in the playoffs and he couldn't affect their seed whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could literally have sat everyone, but they didn't. They decided to stupidly play guys like Austin Ekeler and Mike Williams. And I think both of them got hurt.
Absolutely classic, you know. It's just further indication as to why people don't do that.
Unless you're the LA Chargers. And
Unless you're the Chargers.
They might have nice uniforms, but they don't have nice coaching.
They do have nice uniforms. Maybe if the Cardinals had better uniforms, you know.
If we did, we'd be in the playoffs, clearly. That's the only thing that's standing in our way, really. Not bad coaching or like a terrible roster or anything like that. Just the fact that they have hideous uniforms, so outdated.
All I'm saying is if you have better uniforms, you'll have more players want to come and play for you for the, you know, the drip. That's the word I'm thinking of. The trip.
I was going to say you're not very hip, are you?
It's been a long day. It's been a very, very long day. It's been a very, very long season. And we will be back next week to discuss the season as a whole as we do our 2022 British Bird Gang Awards, which I believe voting is now open for, right, Tom?
Yeah, I decided to open the voting last night because, you know, what better things do you have to do after work than put together a Google Forms spreadsheet for people to vote on? And, I mean, so far we've had quite a few in. I think it's 50 the last time I checked, so
that's pretty
in a day, that's not too bad.
Yeah, we usually get over 100 or you know, a couple hundred sometimes, some years. So if you're listening to this in the week that it came out, then voting is open. I believe, you know, you can head to all of the usual places and find links to it there.
I might post it on Reddit just to piss off that guy who doesn't like me posting because they're posting content. I'll do that just to wind him up.
I would if I were you. As I said, we'll discuss that more. And in the meantime, as Tom was joking about at the start, we do actually have quite a lot of news out of the desert because on Monday, Cardinals owner and president Michael Bidwill held a conference to say that he had let or he'd fired Cliff Kingsbury and that he had received a resignation from Steve Keim, who is leaving to focus on his health.
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously, the Monday after the season concludes is always known as Black Monday.
Yeah.
But to be honest, there wasn't really that many firings, were there?
No.
I can remember.
I mean, to be honest, I think like as soon as I saw Cliff was in there, I was like, that's taking my attention now.
I mean, to be honest, I think most of the other teams have like sacked their coaches in the season. I mean, like Carolina. Yeah,
that is true.
Denver,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, the other teams that you would think would be looking to change coaches. So
yeah, and Houston. I remember
Houston,
that one.
Yeah.
I mean, that Houston one's hilarious because I just see it like, because obviously they won, didn't they, at the weekend?
Yeah.
So they were sitting in the number one spot in the draft. But obviously Lovie Smith's been told before that, you know, you'll be out after this game anyway. So what he's done is just put his team out there to go and win, basically screwing them out of the number one pick.
It's such an odd thing because you like I guess the players' drive to win is just that high that they're like, no, we want to go and win.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's not like he's a terrible coach, he's just like,
nah,
with like he was set up to fail anyway, really.
Yeah, it's
just nothing there.
I guess, you know, we can discuss that with respect to Cliff Kingsbury as well, but you know, I would argue that, you know, in some ways he wasn't a terrible coach, you know, all things considered. Like, actually, this that might be a good time to bring this up now. Cliff Kingsbury obviously fired with a you know, significant losing record, been very unpopular with very kind of vocal number of the fans. But where do you think you would rank him out of like the last, say, four or five coaches?
I mean, he's not obviously had the success that Bruce Arians had.
Yeah.
But he's also nowhere near as much of a dick as Bruce Arians. So kind of like evens it out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have to put Bruce up as at the top purely because of the success that he had while he was there. But I think I'm having to put Cliff like sort of second there.
I mean, to be honest, like I've said this on Twitter as well, and again, quite a lot of people did agree with me. Like, you know, when it comes like to the end of like a coach's reign at a team,
yeah,
like in any sport, like if you're really like pissed off at them, you're going to be like glad that they're gone, aren't you? You're like, you've been spending like the last few games or so like hoping, is this going to be their last game? Because, you know, we need change. I never actually got that point with Cliff Kingsbury. Like, he's never done anything really to, like, piss me off and, like, say, I hope you get rid of him in the morning. It's like, he's obviously a good coach, but maybe this isn't a job for him. He's a head coach in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were kind of... We've always been, like, a very pro-Cliff Kingsbury podcast, you know, for quite a long time. And it was only really in the last, I think, 6 to 8 weeks that we really started to go, right, come on, something's got to change here. And ultimately, like, while I still believe, yes, something has to change, do I think that firing Cliff Kingsbury will make everything automatically better? No, I don't think so. I do think that, you know, it's part of a series of changes that need to happen, mostly just to provide, you know, new, fresh blood, I guess, to the organization.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely, because it's like he was part of the problem, but he wasn't the problem at the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem at the Cardinals, we could spend like hours listing them off, couldn't we? Like, you know, crappy drafting, poor roster management, stupidly spending cap on players who don't play, signing injury-prone players, you know.
Signing really old players who then just retire.
I mean, some of them just don't even have the decency to actually retire, do they? They just quit playing and, like, never come back.
Well, never.
You fade injuries and all that, whatever.
Yeah, never forget, like, so we were, you know, hiring, like, other top flight QBs who we then just immediately sat.
Yeah, I mean, it's just obviously something did have to change with the coach.
Yeah.
But also we needed a change at GM as well. And, you know, obviously Steve Kerr's health issues have come into play there.
Yeah.
We can't speculate on what they are because we don't know what they are.
No, I don't think we should. But in, you know, in general, Steve Keim was at the team for like 25 years or something like that. I think it's 24, 25 years. He joined in 1999. And, you know, that's obviously a huge amount of institutional experience that the Cardinals then begin to like miss out on there. But equally, he's had a good stint at... I'm sorry, I should clarify. He's not been GM for 25 years. He started off as a scout then. But the Cardinals, you know, they need something fresh. And it's been no secret that Steve Keim's drafting overall just hasn't worked out that well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you only have to look like the class that Buda Baker was part of. Yep. He's literally the only remnant of that team.
Exactly. You know, like we draft all these players and put investment into them, and then they either become too expensive for us and just leave, a la Tyrann Mathieu, or they just turn out to be a bust in some way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's had his good moments, hasn't he? You know, like swindling the Houston Texans for DeAndre Hopkins. You know,
yeah,
he's had a few good draft picks here and there, but consistently, like building a roster, you know, like providing a team with a solid foundation to build on. He's done none of that whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I think that's just it. You know, it's the team's never felt like it's had a consistent core for the last probably 10 years, I think. You know, maybe it might have looked like it in some ways with guys like Larry Fitzgerald sticking around all that time. But when you then, you know, dig a bit deeper and you look at other parts of the team, you realize, no, there's not been anything like a bit of a kind of dynasty building up.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at, like, I mean, take the both sides of the football. Like, on offense, how many players are you counting you could, like, build a team around?
Yeah.
Outside of Kyler Murray, obviously.
Exactly. And, you know,
like, there's no one at wide receiver, is there?
Well, I mean, I think if you wouldn't necessarily build a team around, like, the likes of DeAndre Hopkins, right? And the reason you wouldn't do that is because he's just getting on in his career. And, like, I think we got a brilliant deal for him from the Houston Texans, but he's not the guy that you're looking to stick around for the next, you know, 10 years, making a difference the whole time.
No, I mean, he is like, what, coming up to 30 now, is he?
I think he's, is he not past 30?
I don't know. I mean, I'm always surprised when I see like how old he is, but I'm sure he's like 29, 30. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's still got a few years left, but it's like,
well,
there's rumours going around at the moment saying that we may have like trade offers coming in for him over the offseason.
Well, this goes back to what I was saying in the past couple of weeks, which is that we need to start thinking about whether we want to make this a retool or a rebuild. And I really think we should consider doing the latter, which to me would say, you know, trade away Hopkins, get a good price for him.
Yeah, I mean, he is arguably asking for an extension, and it's like, do the Cardinals want to give him the extension, or would they possibly give that to Hollywood Brown instead?
I mean, yeah, it depends on when you want to be competitive, right? Because like Hollywood, if you can get him to stick around, has that just that bit longer left in the tank, maybe? Especially when you consider that if you get rid of Hopkins, yes, you've got dead cap space, but like you're not using that over the next few years. You're leveraging this Hopkins trade into like draft capital and building up guys for the next, you know, for the push in 3 years, 4 years, rather than in the next two.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, but really, can you rebuild when you're spending so much money on Kyler Murray? You are literally tied to him for the next 2 years, whatever.
Yeah,
because, absolutely. Like, the say you were to, like, cut Kyler Murray or, like, try to trade him away, the dead cap left behind is astronomical.
Yeah, it's not worth considering, you know.
And then it's also like, why would you do that anyway, you know? I mean, extensions aren't really worth a shit anymore, are they, given like what they've just done with Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's something worth talking about, actually, because obviously it was pretty much this time last year, almost a year to the day, that Cliff and Keim both got signed to, was it 4 year extensions to their contracts as like a show of faith?
It was 10 months ago, I think it was, sure so.
Okay. Oh, no, do you know what it is? I'm thinking of, it was 4 years ago today that Kingsbury got brought in.
Yeah, so it's like basically, I think with Cliff Kingsbury's contract, at least, he was guaranteed up to 2026 with a team option for 2027.
There you go. I mean, I saw a lot of people obviously complaining about us having to pay his salary for the next while, but I believe that technically we only have to pay it until he finds another like football job, and he needs to actively be trying to do that. And I do think that there's a good chance he'll land somewhere nicely. Like I think going to look at like, you know, one of the coordinator positions or heading up to New England and studying under Bill could be a good fit for him, or potentially even going back down to college. Not down to college, going back to college.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, I think the term is offsetting money, so
yeah,
basically say like he was on $5 million here or something like that, and if he was then went somewhere else and was like paid, I don't know, like $2 million or something,
yeah,
we'd pay the extra like the $3 million on top. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it works as well. And I think we technically pay him, we don't pay him the full $5 million while he's looking or something like that, but I ain't no lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, just thankfully it's Michael Bidwell's account that's coming out of, not our own, because bloody hell.
Absolutely.
I suppose you can't, like, people can't accuse him of being cheap anymore, though.
Yeah, well, that's true, actually, because it's, you know, that's not a cheap decision, is it, to like let go and keep paying for that?
I mean, the whole thing with Keim is another different matter entirely, though, because you don't know what the clauses are now that he's literally stepped away himself.
Yeah, I think, you know, that the only discussion we can have about that is more speculation about the health issue, and I'm happy to just let that lie. You know, I think we've discussed the job that Keim did. I'm glad to see us move on from him at this point in time, and you know, but I wish him well. Obviously, I wish, you know, Cliff Kingsbury well. As you said, I don't feel any ill will towards him.
No, absolutely, you know, like it's not his fault the roster was so terribly put together.
Yeah,
and he could only work with what he's got in front of him. So, like, injuries as well, they're not his fault.
No,
you can blame him for a lot of things, but you can't blame him for that.
I do think, you know, the buck stops with him, though, and that's part of the issue is, you know, with some of the injuries, I think when it starts to be a pattern like this, as I said, by some measures, this is our most injury-prone season ever. And I think, you know, some of that has to be down to athletic training as well.
No, the worst thing is, though, the fact we won't have Cliff Kingsbury anymore.
We won't be able to play the little video anymore.
We won't, no.
Someone should make a new one for whoever our new coach coming in is.
I mean, I don't think it'd have the charm, would it, if someone tried something new?
And they need to have, like, bad dad dancing, don't they?
I mean, hopefully, like, if, say, Cliff Kingsbury does come back to the NFL and he coaches a team that we end up losing against.
Yeah.
I so hope someone's going to use that against the Cardinals. I will put at AZ Cardinals, and then just put you lost to Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, I can't even say his name anymore. Yeah, it'd be funny if that like followed him around for his career, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the internet, so those sort of things can carry on.
It's interesting, actually, that somebody brought it up a few weeks ago. But, you know, no coach in Arizona. And once again, when we talk about franchise records for this team, they, it's worth remembering that one, they're one of the oldest teams in the NFL. They're 100 years old, but no coach in Arizona has ever lasted more than 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a crazy stat in itself, but, like, who was the coach that's lasted longest? I think it's Ken Whisenhunt, wasn't it?
Ken Whisenhunt did 5 seasons, and I don't think anyone else has done more than that. Or, well, yeah, there might be somebody back in, like, the 30s or something that had as long a stint, but, yeah, Ken Whisenhunt, you know... obviously not the greatest coach that we've ever had, but did take us to a Super Bowl once.
Yeah, I mean, so he's got to have some sort of, like, some sort of ability to manage to take that team there.
Yeah.
Although I suppose, you know, like, having Kurt Warner and prime Larry Fitzgerald did help an awful lot.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is circumstance as well, but, you know, it's funny because you look at other teams and they're just so set with their head coaches. They know who their head coach is, and like, that's part of the stable, you know, thing, in the same way that, like, I guess Steve Keim was our stable GM for a while.
I mean, do we want some breaking news while we're actually recording that?
Go on then.
This is coming from Ian Rappaport. The Arizona Cardinals have received permission to speak with Saints coach Sean Payton.
Ooh.
As they plot out their coaching search, one of the more coveted coaches available. Payton also has an interview looming with the Broncos. But I mean, come on. Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson?
Yeah.
It's not a competition, is it?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think, you know, with Sean Payton, so Sean Payton has been one of the favourites among fans for probably the last, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks, while, you know, it's becoming clearer that Cliff was going to be fired, and the situation was looking like that. But the looming threat seems to be, what are the Saints going to ask for in return?
Yeah, I mean, obviously people are saying, you know, they want a first round pick in return. And, you know, I say to that, they could go swivel, not having the number 3 overall pick. We're having that for once.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a tricky thing to balance, right? Because it's actually one of the things that's going to attract other head coaches to us, probably, is the possibility of a nice high pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally maybe the only thing we've got going for us, other than Kyler Murray.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously a fresh GM as well, so like totally new approach. But yeah, Sean Payton, I mean, it could be a really good replacement, though, is Sean Payton.
But I mean, you see,
really, you know, successful period in the Saints history when they had Drew Brees and, you know, they were making the postseason regularly.
Yeah, I'm just going to have a look how old he is. So he is 59 years old, so I suppose.
Yeah,
could he last 6 years here?
Oh, I think easily. You know, I do think there's a chance that he, you know, Bruce Arians himself into just like deciding he's going to retire at a certain point. But, you know, he might be coming up for 60, but he doesn't have to hit the tackle bags himself, right?
True. And I mean, there was a coach who's only just retired for the Falcons and he's like 70 odd.
Yeah.
So, you know, he can do whatever he wants for as long as he wants these days.
Yeah, I think he could easily, you know, stick around age-wise. Whether he would necessarily have the out-and-out patience, because at the end of the day, you know, if you as a coach, obviously you want to get paid and stuff like that, but I think ultimately you want to go out there and you want to win. And if you're 60, are you thinking, like, do I want to win in 5 to 10 years, or do I want to win in 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Cardinals aren't really set up to be like a overnight turnaround, are they? Because, like, what have they got on the roster at the moment? And, like, who? I mean, they got enough free agents of their own who they should bring back, but will they be able to?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I think there's 30 plus free agents on the roster right now, unrestricted free agents.
Yeah, so I mean, you obviously want to bring guys like Zach Allen and Byron Murphy back, as long as they're not like overly expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. But it'd be a huge mistake to miss out on those guys just now.
I mean, especially like when we say the Cardinals can't draft, but then they're like two guys who, I mean, Zach Allen especially, he's really shown out this year.
Yeah, he definitely has, you know, potential one of the Bird Gang awards as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's definitely in the running for a couple of awards there. But it's one of those things, like, he did have his post-season interview, you know, like when they meet them outside the lockers, and he basically said he's leaving that all up to his agent. So, I mean, hopefully our future GM will be on the phone to his agent and saying, you know, we want him back.
Yeah, fair.
Because we want to pair him with either Will Anderson or Jalen Carter.
Have you started on the mock drafts already, have you?
I have, yeah. It's definitely that time of the year, mock draft Monday instead of Misery Monday.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it definitely beats out a Misery Monday, doesn't it? Yeah, well, what else have we got to talk about with this? I mean, I guess in Michael Bidwill's statement, he was saying that he really wants to hire a GM before a head coach, but he would definitely like take a head coach up on the right offer if that, you know, came through first.
Which must be why he's talking to Sean Payton right now, probably.
Yeah. Well, I know he's also, he's said he's interviewed his internal candidates and one external candidate already, and that was on Monday.
That was for the GM position that was, I think.
Well, that's what I was saying. It was like his, you know, in terms of that hiring pattern, you know, he might have his GMs, you know, he might have his favorite for GM already because he's done, is it Adrian Wilson and
who Quentin else? Harris.
Quentin Harris for the internals.
Yeah.
And then he said he's already interviewed one external and like spoken to set up interviews with others. So maybe he's already, you know, got his front runner or his favorite for that.
I mean, I've seen quite a few names pop up, you know, the guys who possibly would have never heard of before because, you know, they're the front office guys and it's like nobody really pays attention to them outside of your own team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for the most part, I'm pretty sure that I will not recognize whoever comes in at the GM position. I think it's unlikely that it will be like a known name.
I mean, there are some names you may have heard of. Obviously, Adrian Wilson, Quentin Harris, we've heard of them, but that's because they're
Cardinals insiders, yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to see if I can find some names because, you know, like we say, not going to know these names anyway, are we? I know there's some guy, the Titans, are also interviewing the pod.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's prudent to interview as many people as possible for this, right? Like, it's good to see what people's priorities and stuff would be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're not just going to, like, focus on, like, one candidate, are you? Because, like,
exactly.
What if they're terrible? It's like, why waste all your time just on them?
Not only that, but, like, for me, you know, if I was Michael Bidwill, I'd be taking notes of what everyone says and just be like, you know, whoever you do hire, you just hand them a stack of them and say, like, here is what everyone else who I was thinking about hiring had as ideas for what they would do with the franchise. Like, don't have to do them, but have fun with it.
Here's one name, Ian Cunningham. Have you ever heard of him?
I recognize the name, but I couldn't tell you where from.
Well, no, he's the Bears AGM. Apparently, he's one who they have put a request in to interview.
Okay.
Although, like, why you would interview a Chicago Bear when, like, they're one of the two teams worse than us this past season? I don't know.
I mean, I guess they know how to run a bad team.
Yeah, but we don't want to be a bad team, do we?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure I saw some guys named Ron as well. It's like, you're the GM named Ron.
It is a bit of a classic GM type of name, though, isn't it?
I suppose it does sound like a GM, yeah.
Yeah.
But is he good enough to be a GM? I don't know. I mean, it's one of those ones, it's like, obviously, if a GM is doing a good job, you know their name. And if they're doing a bad job, you know the name. Other than that, it's like, it's just some guy who's running the team.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, there's a reason that fans tend to know a hell of a lot more about the head coach than the general manager. And it's because, you know, the head coach has the more tangible impact on a Sunday. But, you know, the GM is the one who ultimately is the person who's kind of in the behind the scenes building the team. Sure, there's lots of input from other people, but, you know, the GM is where the buck stops with that, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if the GM's not putting the team together, then the HC's going to fail anyway, isn't he? So
Exactly, yeah.
They basically need to work in unison, which is why understanding.
Which is why I am glad that, like, you know, the pair of them are gone together in that sense. Yeah. Like, it's good to have like a fresh start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it made no sense to like say, I mean, I suppose you could say, you know, Kime stepped down and Cliff Kingsbury staying, but then you'd have to find a GM who would be happy to work with Cliff Kingsbury as his head coach.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're probably narrowing the field down there, aren't you? Because like maybe the internal guys would stay and do that, but would someone outside like do that, or would they rather, you know,
well,
get
that's
rid
just
of him?
That, like,
and, like, they can have an input on who the next guy's going to be.
Well, that's just it. Like, that would be one of my first questions as a, you know, prospective GM. If they were like, well, how would you rebuild this Cardinals organization? I would say, can I hire my own, you know, my own head coach?
And Michael Bidwell will be like, no, that's my job. Yeah. But you can have a say.
Well, yeah.
I mean, exactly. I listen to you, but you can have a say.
Yeah, I think at least having a say in it would be an important part of that.
I mean, it was interesting. Did you actually listen to his like press conference that he did?
Yeah, I was just listening to it before we started there, because it was, you know, you could tell it wasn't an easy thing for him to have done, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not like he took any joy in getting rid of either of them. Like, obviously, Steve Kime's the guy who, like you say, he's been with the organization since 1999. So obviously Bidwell's seen him move his way up through the organization, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
But obviously we saw them always together in the, like, the boxes,
yeah,
drinking pals and all that.
It must be, it must be quite wild, you know, when you go to the first game of the next season and first, you know, for the first time in however, in 20 years or so, that you've got a different guy in the box with you.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll stop. Like, that's the thing, though, with Michael Bidwell. He's a lot more hands-on than probably most owners.
He is, yeah. For better or for worse, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that a detrimental thing to the team or not? I suppose he's not, like, controlling in the way, like, say, I don't know, like, Jerry Jones is in Dallas, is he?
At least not outwardly.
Well, I mean, he's not, like, made himself a self-appointed GM so he can, like, make picks and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, at least it means that the organization isn't always having to, like, convince him to spend more money or whatever. He's, like, a bit more on the ground and, like, he knows when the money is going to need to be spent and things like that.
I think he might be running out of money now, though, because he's had to pay off Steve Wilkes, you know. He's probably still paying him off. Now he's got to pay off Cliff Kingsbury and he's got to pay off Steve Kime as well. It's like, and he's also got to run the team as well.
Yeah.
And also fund his lifestyle as a pilot. You know, just fly around everywhere. It's like,
maybe they're harder up than we think if he's the one who's like flying the team between places as well.
I think he enjoys doing it though, doesn't he?
Oh, so yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
May as well use it if you got a pilot license. I know I'd fly everywhere, even though.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a story for a different day.
It's a story for a different day. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to cover in terms of the only other thing that I had. Oh, that was an interesting conversation point. One of the other names that's being tossed around, and this is very provisional at this point because this person still has a job. But people were talking about Sean McVay maybe getting the old boot from Los Angeles. I kind of doubt it, given that he has, you know, he won the Super Bowl last year. But if Sean McVay were to become available, would you take Sean McVay or would you take Sean Payton?
I mean, the thing with McVay is he actually wanting to coach anymore?
Mm. Yeah, good question.
Maybe he's going to, like, do a Tony Romo and go into, like, the commentary booth or, you know, be, like, one of those analysts on the NFL shows.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be wanting for money anymore at this point, anyway.
Exactly, set up for life, you know, with whatever he's earned at the Rams and, you know, he's won a Super Bowl. Like, really, what more does he want to do in this game?
Yeah, I suppose. And, you know, ultimately, if he wanted to take a struggling team and build them up, the much better place to do that at would be with the Rams, who, you know, with a few problems sorted out, could be competitive again, versus the Cardinals, who need a big old rebuild.
I mean, the thing with the Rams is, though, you know, they've obviously had a really terrible season, and thankfully we were able to pick ahead of them in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is good, at least. And we still managed to beat them, didn't we?
Yeah, we managed to win one game against them, but, like, who cares in a 4-win season?
I'll always take a win against the Rams after that streak of not winning against them for, like, 8 years or whatever it was.
Yeah, so hopefully McVay goes, and then we can Start a winning streak against the Marauder.
Well, my original question still stands. So, like, you know, McVay, let's just say he wants to continue and he wants to come, and Peyton wants to come to the Cardinals as well. Which would you pick in an ideal world?
I mean, probably Peyton.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, just
more experience and things like that.
I mean, I don't think I could handle having Sean McVay as our head coach. It's just, it'd be weird.
It would
seeing him beat us that many times and then
I think I would take McVay though, because in a way, like, the whole Cliff Kingsbury experiment was an attempt to emulate the success that the Rams had had with McVay. And I think, you know, if the whole system is set up to work that way and set up to work in the way that McVay likes to work, then, you know, wouldn't he be a good fit in comparison to Sean Payton?
I mean, it's interesting the fact that Sean McVay is apparently allowing all of his assistants to take interviews.
Yeah, I heard that, which implies a little bit more that he won't be around next season.
And I mean, it's a question of who else will not be around on that LA Rams team, because, you know, there's quite a few guys who were mulling just like ours, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of mulling retirement with the Rams, you know, I could imagine a few of them deciding to stick around, because maybe they would have decided to retire should they have won the Super Bowl, you know.
I mean, that's the thing. Especially, we should probably talk about who maybe the Cardinals are going to have retire as well.
I mean, we've obviously got J.J. Watt being a big one, but there are a few others.
Yeah, I mean, A.J. Green's possibly considering it. He'll talk about that with his family after the season.
Yeah, I think it's a fair bet that he would retire after the season he's had.
Yeah, I mean, he's really been like a non-factor, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, even last season, you know, he had a bit of a difficult time, especially through the second half of the season. And, you know, you could, a lot of the times when that happens to wide receivers, it's really just due to them slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, we could see three of our five starting offensive linemen, like, retiring as well.
Totally unsurprising. I mean, what would you even call a starting offensive lineman in our roster just now anyway?
I mean, week one, they were supposed to be starters, but, like, that quickly fell apart, didn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, Justin Pugh considered it last offseason, as did Rodney Hudson, and both of them seem to have basically retired halfway through this season, so, you know, I think they're probably both gone, never to set foot on the field ever again.
I would suspect so, given the, you know, given the injury rates that both of them have had.
And also the reported fact that Rodney Hudson struggles to walk these days. Or is that Calvin Beecham?
Yeah.
I think it's both of them, actually.
I mean, regardless, it's, you know, it's one of those things that particularly play on the line can do to a guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's always going to take a toll on the body, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, Calvin Beecham, he's another one, possibly. We could see him hang up, but, you know, along with Jalen Thompson, I suppose he does deserve some credit, because those two were the only players to play in every single game and start every single game.
Sorry, the only players to do that. I mean, wow, what a season.
I mean, I don't remember Andy Lee not getting injured, or does he not count?
I thought we had somebody else punt once in a while, but maybe I'm confusing with the time that we got like six kickers in.
I don't know, I'm trying to think, but yeah. I mean, I'm sure I only saw it with those two, so you have deserved some credit, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Considering the fact, like, Calvin Beecham was shown on Hard Knocks, like, having to go to the trainers and lie down because he had, like, a hernia or something.
Yes.
And yet he's continued to play through the whole season with whatever injuries he's got.
I mean, a lot of these guys, they're tough. They're tough guys. Paid a lot of money, but not for no reason.
Yeah, probably a different breed, isn't he? Like, if he was a millennial... Oh, yeah. He'd have been at home chilling on Call of Duty like Kyler.
Yeah, maybe we'd need a homework clause instead of a, like, coming to work to make sure you can stand up clause.
I'm trying to think, have we got anything else we need to say about this? Because we're kind of in a limbo now, aren't we? Because, like, we don't know who's going to come in. And, like, when they do come in, that's when we'll have more news to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, in terms of GM and head coach, especially in the past, we've proven with this stuff that our speculation is, like, is really pretty useless. And, you know, it will all shake itself out in the coming weeks. So, you know, I would say for now, let's leave our coverage there. We'll pick up our 2022 review and our awards coverage next week. But in the meantime, we'll kind of round out our week discussing the fact that the Bird Gang Bowl 10 has a winner.
I mean, we could do, or we could talk about the pick'ems before that.
Oh, sure. We'll finish on the Bird Gang Bowl. Pick'ems, my final week for the regular season, I got 6 points for a total of 148.
Yeah, I finished with 8 this week, so I got 162 in total. Although I will say the fact that I wasn't able to pick the 6 p.m. games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, I found the same thing. It was really annoying. I tried to go for some more out there picks as well, because I was hoping to like claw a few points back from you.
Yeah, I mean, I did get the Houston Texans to win, but again, that wasn't my pick, but I'll take credit for it.
Yeah, why not?
It's on my account, so obviously I made the pick.
Yeah.
And I mean, we do have the week 19 fixtures as well, so yeah, there's still points on offer.
I will keep playing. We'll see how we get on next week. But I would declare you the winner for the regular season anyway.
I'd declare me the regular season winner as well.
Good. Now, meanwhile, in more involved fantasy sports, as I said, we do have a winner for the Bird Gang Bowl 10.
We do. And I mean, let me just get the tweets up, because I did decide to tweet them out like individually.
Yeah. I saw, so I've been spoiled on who the winner is.
I mean, we can be disappointed by the name of the team that won.
Yeah, I know, especially when there was another team with the same name that did it better.
Yeah, so let's see. We had So Good It Hurts. They finished with 119.66. Full Wattage at 117.76. McBride and McPrejudice had 133.38, 81.14 for Nuke Skywalker, 102.92 for McBride of Frankenstein. Corpse McBride had 118.06. Steve Kimes' Draft Dartboard finished with 123.56. The Vigilantes had 115.28. McBride and Prejudice finished with 108.72. And then we finish off with My Ball Sack Hurts, with just a terrible score of 84.32.
Oh, so grim. Yes. So that gives our final winner of McBride and McBrejudice with, what was it, 130-something points?
133.38 points.
It's a pretty good showing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, some players didn't actually play, so...
I mean, a final week showdown like that is always a really, like, tough call. Because yeah, I saw some players that put in like otherwise like very respectable scores also had like a zero here and there from guys who just got sat.
Yeah, so I mean, they could have changed them, but they never got in contact with me to make changes. So you snooze, you lose, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that means McBride and McPrejudice, even though they have a terrible name, and I've made sure they know about that.
Yeah. I guess when you send them the silverware out.
Yeah, I just need to go source one now, another Bird Gang Bowl, and hopefully this one doesn't break on the first time of asking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although if it does, I will have a second one for my collection of broken plates.
It would be quite funny, wouldn't it?
I mean, mine's still going strong with super glue. So.
Yeah.
It's full of British Bird Gang stickers and all that sort of stuff. How exciting.
I've got a little bowl like that somewhere as well, full of stickers and keychains and things.
I know. Look into the sad and prophetic and boring lives of the people behind the British Bird Gang breakdown.
Well, I guess that really is kind of it for us this week. As I said, we'll be back next week to do our awards. Please do, in the meantime, go and vote in those awards.
Should we not talk about the categories of the awards? Even if they are literally like the same categories as every single year.
We'll go on then. I always like to warn people about the very first category, which is GOAT of the Year. Because it doesn't mean greatest of all time of the year. It means, in the more British sense, the GOAT of the year, i.e. the not the hero.
I mean, you only have to look at the nominations to see, like, they're not actually the GOATs.
I'm pretty sure anyone who looked at the nominations would generally go like, oh, okay, it's Billy Price is a nomination for GOAT of the Season, just for an example.
Yeah, so we got GOAT of the Season, Disappointment of the Year, Game of the Year, Play of the Year. How would you rate the 2022 season? Spoiler alert, not very highly.
I think some of the preliminary stuff is looking pretty bad there, but we'll see how we get on.
I will spoil it and say the highest score so far has been 4.
Oh, that's grim.
And I'm not sure which one out of one and two has the most at the moment, but I think it was one the last time I looked.
Okay. Go ahead.
Best new addition, breakout player of the year, veteran player of the year, rookie of the year, special teams player of the year, defensive player of the year, offensive player of the year, and of course, British Bergang 2022 MVP.
Yeah. So it's a good slate again. Plenty to vote for.
But sadly, Mike Kyler Murray will not clear up every single award because, you know, injuries and all that.
I've just checked our player of the game role of honor, and it's very different to the last couple of years when Kyler just dominated that list.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we could go through that now because, you know.
Yeah, you want to do that now?
I mean, we can point out a couple of things that I noticed. I did notice when collating the report, and that was that Zaven Collins owned Seattle, winning player of the game both times we played them. JJ Watt won three of the last four awards. We've got one player who isn't even on the team anymore who won him an award.
Nice.
No prizes for guessing who that is, but I suppose answers in the chat box or wherever.
Yep.
If you know who that was.
Greg Dortch had a brace.
Yeah, he had two. Like, it's weird though, isn't it, Greg Dortch?
Yeah, I'm looking at it and I'm really surprised, like, give it, on a kind of look back at the season, I'm really surprised that James Conner only won it once.
I know, it's a weird, I mean, he did have a few big games here and there, and he did seem to last most of the season.
I think ultimately it might be just like a victim of his own success, you know, like a lot of the times people win this, it's because they're like, they make a really good play and they have like a standout moment for them. Whereas, When it comes to Connor, he's just doing it every week.
Yeah, and I mean, no one's going to vote like someone who gets like 3 yards to carry as like player of the game, are they?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially in like some of these losses where there's actually like one play to remember, and that's what won them the play of the award. But yeah, I mean, we'll have plenty more analysis of the terrible season that was in next week's episode.
And then we can finally put it to bed.
Although then we may have another episode afterwards to talk about who the next head coach and GM of the Cardinals will be.
Yeah, but we have to agree that we're going to call that the start of our 2023 coverage because I'm done with this season.
Nearly done with this season.
Nearly. After next week, I am done with this season.
Exactly. We need to hand out awards to players who technically don't deserve them. But, you know, as is tradition, we have to do it.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I think that'll do it for this week's episode of the British Bergang Breakdown. So as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bergang. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Bergang. Join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bergang. Buy British Bergang merch, britishbergang.tmall.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review wherever it is you get your podcasts from. And of course, don't forget to vote in the British Bergang Awards. Links are everywhere for it, and they will be posted daily, maybe twice daily, I don't know. We'll see, because Twitter's algorithms at the moment, so.
it's gone a bit haywire.
Stupid Elon Musk. I'm not paying for it, even though I would get a tick, which is tempting.
Don't do it.
I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I'm not going to fund his evil schemes. But I will say goodbye and thanks for listening to this week's episode of the British Bergang Breakdown. Until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.